ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I bet you've experienced quite a lot of change in your career. Have you ever wondered if there's too much of it and what it was all for?
You did this 6 months ago and nothing much better came of it. And you also did it 6 months before that and nothing much better came of that either.
Groupthink assumes change is positive. Disruption is key to growth, and you just have to get on board. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, is it time to rethink change at work? We can't stop time, but could we be adapting and improving in a better way?
My name is Ashley Goodall, and I am the author of The Problem with Change.
Ashley has worked as a consultant for Deloitte and was the leadership and team intelligence head at Cisco. But he started off as a musician, and he learned how to conduct a symphony orchestra where teamwork is key.
It teaches you a little bit about leadership as a way of helping other people do what they can do and you can't, which is a very different view of leadership than I think the one that sort of predominates today in culture.
He says the idea of disruption in the business world has become like a cult.
Well, it's sort of something that's become unconnected from the reality on the ground. So, you know, a cult is something where some set of beliefs takes over and it's impossible to challenge those beliefs and they become a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. In a similar way, the idea of disruption at work, which is probably 25 years old, has reached this point where it's assumed to be a good thing. It's assumed to be necessarily a good thing. And if you show up with a little bit of evidence and go, all the people being disrupted are, technical term, miserable, and miserable doesn't help you do your job, then people don't know what to make of that. It's assumed that the only way to improve things in the world is to disrupt them, to turn them on their heads, to change rapidly, to change constantly, to change in a way that pays no heed to any of the virtues of stability or the needs of human psychological health, and we've got to disrupt everything all the time, and if you're not disrupting, you're not winning. That's the cult of disruption.
You mentioned the C word, change. What's the difference between change and improvement then?
Well, I would say that they're just different. Let's start off by going, there's a difference. Change means different, improvement means better. And there's a lot of change in the world of work that I think people on the receiving end would go, yeah, it's different. I'm not sold on better. I had other ideas as to what better might look like. You didn't ask me, but I had some thoughts about better. But what you've done is different. Jury has not yet returned, but we think change and improvement are two different things. This connects to the idea of the cult of disruption, if you like. Because if you live in a world that says the job of leaders is to create change, then you get constant change. You don't get constant improvement because no one runs around. And this is weird. No one runs around going, the job of leaders is to create improvement. People don't actually say that. So we've sort of got wrapped up a little bit in our own philosophies of work and our own ideologies. I think we've lost sight of a very, very simple fact. That if you want to make improvement, you actually have to know what improvement looks like. You have to test whether you created improvement, and you have to help people help you improve. Change doesn't do any of those things.
Aha. So there's a big difference between change and improvement. Despite that, Ashley argues that leaders are incentivized just to create change. When they take over a role, it's often a KPI. But he says that the job of a leader isn't change, it's actually performance, and they're not always aligned.
So you have to start with an idea as a leader of what do you do to help people do their jobs better? And again, that sounds super, super straightforward. It's like every parent is like, how do I help my kid be more proficient at something? Every coach is, how do I help my team be better at what they do? There are so many roles in society that are help others do better. But the job of leader, we have, I think, lost sight of how do I help other people do better? Because now it's very intellectualized and it's very, how do I deliver shareholder value? And nobody really knows what that is or over what time frame it should be measured. Or how do I deliver change? Or how do I deliver innovation? Or how do I... And we, in all of this, it takes a while to get back to, hang on a second, how do you help people do their jobs? That seems to be massively important. If you study the effect of change, constant change, on human psychology, the first thing that smacks you in the face is it makes it really hard for people to do their jobs. So when a leader comes in and says, my mandate is change, I want the world to translate that as, my mandate is impair human performance. And then to go, that's really daft. Can we do, my mandate is to help all of you, the employees, do your best work. That's what I'm here to do. Now, very often we send a leader someplace and go, hey, performance isn't happening. Be the agent of change. And again, those are two very, very different things. And I've been in the trenches while leaders have come in under those circumstances. I've arrived at an organization with an myself with an explicit mandate of make change. What the leader usually does is to say, here's everything that I'm going to change. What you want that leader to do is to say, before we get to the change stuff, what is worth preserving? What is the here that is good and valuable and strong and grounding and underpins our abilities to do what we do every day? What do we need to preserve and protect? Let's understand that, and then we have a foundation on which we can make improvement as distinct from changing willy-nilly.
Okay, so that's the job of leaders, but what happens to everyone else? Ashley spoke to people from businesses around the world for his book and asked them to describe their stories of change. He soon noticed a pattern.
But when you listen to the stories, you realize that, okay, one leader's doing this change, but then they leave. Their personal change story ends, but another one comes along and does a different change. And then they get demoted or promoted or shuffled off somewhere else, and another one comes on and does... And then while all the leaders are changing, someone decides we're going to do a merger. And then while this is on, someone decides to change the policy. And one morning you wake up and Microsoft, God love Microsoft, has changed the technology via the cloud overnight so none of the buttons work anymore. So it's the agglomeration of all of this that strikes you when you talk to people about change. And it's not that one person or one leader in a company necessarily sees or creates all of it, but it is that we live in a world of endless change and everybody keeps making more of it. The problem with being on the receiving end of that is it becomes massively hard to do your best work.
Let's talk about a change event happening then. What kinds of things start happening to the staff when a major change event is either talked about or not talked about?
Well, let's just imagine you get an email. And I think we've all, those of us who've been in the workforce for a little while, have received emails. And sometimes it's a call, but sometimes it's an email. So let's just imagine for now it's an email. And you're sitting at your desk one day and you get an email which says, I'm announcing a big change and there'll be a transformation. And I've sat down with my buddies at the consulting company and they're management consultants. So they're the sort we like. And they've said that we're going to do a transformation because all our competitors are doing this and it's time for the transformation. More to come. Okay, what's your reaction to that? Well, a couple of things happen very quickly. The first is that your sense of uncertainty is triggered. Okay, I don't know what more to come means, but transformation sounds a little bit vague and may have some impact on me that I don't know anything about. That in itself is hard. Uncertainty is hard. What's the second thing that happens while you're reading the email? You realize you're not in control. You don't control what's going to happen next. So your sense of agency, second super important thing for human psychological health, your sense of agency is impaired. Time goes by. The transformation unrolls a little bit further. Somebody says, well, we've got to shuffle all the teams, haven't we? Because your team now has been abolished and we're going to move all the people to the other teams over here. So your sense of belonging is shredded And belonging is really important to us in terms of not just how we feel about work, but how we think, how we get stuff done, how we accomplish things, our sense of identity. So belonging goes. And then at some point along the way, when the team goes, the rituals go. And so our sense of place and permanence and our identity in a particular location in the world goes along with it, because rituals are how we anchor ourselves in place, weirdly enough. And then while you're doing all of this, sooner or later, somebody says, well, hang on, transformation, why does this connect? I'm confused. And you realize that your idea of what makes sense has gone too, and meaning making is super important for human psychological health. But there's no meaning until things make sense. Things can't mean anything if they mean nothing. So you go down this whole list and you go a sense of uncertainty, diminished agency, disrupted sense of belonging, disrupted sense of ritual, disrupted sense of place, disrupted sense of meaning. That's a hard burden to carry for somebody at work. Now, if you say, take the email and send it 8 times a year, and then ask yourself, where does organizational performance come from? And I think things begin to get a little clearer.
In that moment, don't organizations say you need to get comfortable with change, get comfortable with discomfort, disrupt yourself?
Sure.
So what's happening there?
Well, that's sort of like you go to the doctor and he says, this is going to hurt, adjust your mindset. It doesn't make it hurt less. It just means that somebody's saying, I have no better idea to plot a course forward than to say, this is going to be unpleasant and it's on you. Well, why is it on you? Why is it on you? I have leaders who are here, Ashley's definition, hopefully others too, who are here to help me do my job, who are here to remove the barriers, clear the path, so that I can take the few things I'm actually good at and put them at the service of something bigger than me. That's what I want going to work. I know I can't do everything. I know I can do a few things. I'm trying very hard. Make it easier for me. But don't make it harder and then tell me it's my problem. Don't tell me to adjust my mindset or, oh my goodness me, I'm so tired of being told to lean into things. I'm probably the world's worst employee, by the way. But, you know, somebody says, well, lean in. I'm like, well, why? What does that even mean? What it means is get over yourself. That's what it means. Get over yourself. I'm not ready to deal with the things that you need. So that's just poor leadership. It's unimaginative, it's unempathetic, and it doesn't pay attention to what humans actually need, what humans are hardwired to need in order to do their best work.
Is this all sounding a little bit too familiar? I hope you're not feeling too triggered right now. Ashley Goodall suggests an antidote to this rapid change and disruption in the world of work. It's called stability. And it's something airline pilots aim to do for their passengers.
So it's the first thing I actually explain is what it isn't. Stability is not stasis. It doesn't mean stand still and never move at all ever again, because everything evolves. Organizations don't prosper by standing still. But there's a way of moving in the world that is a stable way of moving. So if I wanted to get from my home in New Jersey to your office in Melbourne, I would have to get on a plane, and I would hope that that plane would traverse that distance between us. I want to go somewhere. I would also hope that it did it in stable flight. I don't want to be on a roller coaster flight. I don't want to be zigzagging around across the heavens. I don't want to be gaining altitude and then losing altitude. All of those make it a very uncomfortable experience indeed. But there's this thing called stable flight, which is to say movement and stability are not opposites. But actually can actually in many ways assist one another. So that's the metaphor, that's the concept. What do I mean about organizational stability? Well, back to the list of things that change robs people of. So can we come up with a way of giving people more predictability at work? Can we give them more control? Can we give them a greater sense of belonging? Can we give them a greater sense of place? Can we give them a greater sense of meaning? There are many things that we can do to turn the dial up on all of those. One is to build great teams. If I'm on a great team, that sort of inoculates me against some of the change, some of the ill effects of change, because I actually know my teammates, I belong, we might have a few rituals, I know how the team connects my work to the bigger thing, so it checks all the boxes for me. So that's stability. It's an environment that allows me to contribute in a fairly predictable way, in a fairly consistent set of relationships. That's what change robs and what smart leadership can put back again.
What about the argument that the world is changing rapidly and we need to do things with velocity?
Well, I think that's very true. But it means we need even more stability. I mean, what you're saying is the plane going from New Jersey to Melbourne is flying through a hell of a lot of turbulence. Well, going into the turbulence, do I want to be in stable flight or zigzaggy crazy flight? I want to be in stable flight because it's going to, again, knock us further and further and further off course. So the world that we look out at now, with all the turmoil that we've seen in the last 5 years, and really the needle seems to have been turned off the top of the gauge in terms of global, never mind business change, global change, the world is begging for stability. Businesses can't provide it for everybody outside of work, but we spend a lot of time at work. Right now, businesses add to the instability of their employees' lives. They would do very well for themselves and for their people to detract from it instead.
Stability doesn't mean standing still. So how do you provide stability within an organization and keep working towards the goal of improvement? It involves two circles and a shift in perspective.
We talk a lot at work about the interests of the company. This is the first circle. We talk a lot about how everybody's here to advance the business strategy and how everybody's here to find new customers and how everybody's here to create growth and how everybody's here to create innovation. There's actually a different circle that's what the employees care about, and it's not actually the same as that. Now, many leaders get very disappointed when you say to them, listen, the folks coming through the door every morning or the folks logging on to Zoom every day to begin their day at work, they're actually not quite as fantastically excited about the business strategy as you all are. They have some other things they care about that are meaningfully different, and you need to know what they are. So here are the things in the second circle, not the interests of the business, but the interests of the employees. People like to grow. People like to contribute. People like to feel that they're doing worthy things. People like to form relationships. People like pay, and people like sleep. Some of those are also in the interest of the business. So there's an intersection between the circle. The business wants people who are really good at their jobs, and people like to get better at their jobs. So that's an intersection one. But there are some things that are not in the intersection of those two circles. Actually, pay is not, if the company could get away with having people work for free, it would, believe me. If the company could find employees who don't need sleep or weekends, believe me, it would hire those people. So there are some human things that are separate from the company things. And it's really important to understand those. It's really important to understand that if you want a workforce that can innovate and contribute, you actually have to at some point acknowledge that not everything that's in the interest of the business is in the interest of the employees. And you have to find the intersection things. Find the stuff where the rising tide lifts all boats. People love to be on teams. Organizations want high-performing teams. People love coming up with ideas. Organizations want better ideas. There's a meaningful intersection. Change isn't in it.
What are the implications of that on human resources, HR?
HR has been taught over the years, and believe me, I'm a creature of HR and a very proud member of the HR tribe, but we have been taught over the years that our job is to do the people-related stuff in the first circle. So if the business strategy says we need to open up a new market, then HR will go, great, you probably need to hire some people, you probably need to open an office, you probably need some policies and procedures if it's a different country or a different culture. So HR does the people-related elements of the business strategy. There's much more for HR to do. And in a world of constant change, there's some really important stuff for HR to do. And that is to live in the second circle, to understand that actually the role, the real role of HR is to help the business, help people contribute, to be an advocate for the interests of employees, to stand up for there's been too much change, to get really close to what the experience is like on the front lines of an organization every day, which is very hard for business leaders to find out, by the way, to advocate for teams, to train leaders, to create an ecosystem that supports people in doing their best work. That isn't always to execute the business strategy. Sometimes that's antagonistic to the business strategy. But if you want a stable and enduring and high-performing over time organization, somebody's got to do that work. And I think that's a beautiful thing for HR to do.
You might be thinking, help, I don't work in HR. I don't get to decide whether or not we go through a restructure or have to change the way we do things so they no longer make sense to me. Well, what can you do?
When I am confronting change, I try to go to my sources of stability, because the things that an organization can do for stability, we can all understand for ourselves as well. So the first one is actually the ultimate first person flavor of stability, which is, what am I unimpeachably good at? What can I always do, whether anybody wants to employ me or not, or have me on this team or not, or tell me nice things about myself or not? What is protected because I know I can always do it? What is my special thing that I can always, not necessarily I can use it in this situation, but sooner or later in life, it's going to be there. No one can take that away from me. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I go to really quickly is, who are the people around me? And that might at work be a team, or it might be colleagues, or it might be a work spouse, or it might be family outside work, or it might be a spouse, in other words. But who are the people who will listen and understand? Go find them. And then thirdly, the thing I try to locate for myself is, where's the next couple of steps on my journey that would make me happy? Not that sort of visionary or change the world, or, you know, I avoid the word purpose, although that works for some people. But just, do I kind of know where I'm going? Have I lost sight of where I'm going? Or do I know where I'm going? So whatever the change in the world, what have I got that's essentially me that no one can take away from me? Who have I got to talk to about it? And where are we going to go next? Those, I think, are very reliable in that you're not asking anybody else to do them for you. Good organizations should help with all of those. They should build your skills. They should upgrade your team. They should have a clear sense of direction. They shouldn't change direction on a whim. But if the organization doesn't do that for you, you can always do it for yourself.
So, not all change is necessarily good. There is a difference between change and improvement. This is a call to action to leaders in HR to represent and empower the humans in organizations. And as individuals, it's important to find your agency during turbulent times. Thanks again to Ashley Goodall, a leadership expert and author of The Problem with Change. And please share your stories of change, maybe you even have a positive one, by emailing thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. And this is a companion episode to our story about uncertainty at work. You can find that one on our website as well. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Kerry Dell, on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, work it like a charm.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.